Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Janet Hamilton. She's from Georgia, and we're going to talk about her job as an exercise physiologist. So, Janet, how are you today?
Doing well.
Terrific. So, you've been running for a while, I assume, right?
Yeah, I've always been physically active, and probably in the mid-1980s, I started running. I had previously been involved primarily in weightlifting as my fitness activity and decided to take up running, and it just felt like it worked well, and so I kept doing the weightlifting, but added in running to that, and eventually started coaching runners in the late 1990s, and have had my business running strong ever since.
So when you say weightlifting, tell us a little bit about that. You know, you don't find too many women who concentrate on weightlifting as their regimen.
Well, I had always been a fairly strong individual and had always been fairly active in that regard, so it was a natural fit for me. And I took it up probably in 1980, shortly after I finished my first degree, and it was something that I found challenging and enjoyable, and there weren't too many women in the gym at that time, but nowadays there's a lot more.
So do you use free weights? Do you use the machines?
I primarily prefer to use free weights myself, and that's what I encourage my athletes to use as well, because ultimately your ability to use your strength in daily life is going to be in the form of lifting, pushing, or pulling some object. You know, if you lift a heavy frying pan or pick up a case of water out of your trunk, it's not attached to a track. You have to be able to lift it and control the motion. And so lifting free weights encourages lots of muscle groups to contribute to a motion because they have to fire in a synergy so that whatever it is that you're lifting, pushing, or pulling stays balanced and in control. Now, if you train with a machine, the machine has a fixed path, a track if it were. And so while you will gain some strength in the muscles that you use to lift that machine-operated weight, you're not going to get the same benefit out of that 20 or 30-minute workout than if you had done the same 20 or 30 minutes with free weights. I just really think that you get a lot more bang for your buck with free weights.
So for women, what weight do you recommend that they do free weights? And since a lot of the gyms are closed nationwide, is there a website that they could learn from?
Oh, yeah, there's tons of videos out there for how to do specific movements. But, I mean, really, that's the beauty of resistance training without having to use a machine, is that you don't need to be at a gym to do this. In fact, I don't go to the gym anymore and haven't for years. I use body weight resistance and sometimes elastic band resistance. And I mean, the simple act of stair climbing can be a great resistance activity. You know, climb stairs for 15 or 20 minutes. I guarantee you will have some fatigue in your quad muscles. Now, as to your question about how much weight should a woman lift, it's a myth that women should not lift heavy weights because they'll get muscle bound. That's clearly been proven false in the science for decades of time. What will happen is when you lift a weight that challenges you, you will get stronger. period, whether you are male or female, whether you are young or old, if you push your limits, you will gain strength. If you push your limits too hard, you will get injured. So the trick here is to challenge yourself, but not beat yourself up. So, for example, if you have access to, for example, a couple of 1 gallon milk jugs, you could fill those up with water and do simple free weight exercises holding onto the milk jug. And if that feels like you can do, you know, 40 or 50 repetitions of a movement, then clearly that's not enough weight to be really much benefit to you. You would want to fill it up with something heavier, sand perhaps, or rocks or whatever. So what you want is a weight that challenges you to where you're pushed to finish, say, a set of, I don't know, 8 or 10 repetitions. And, you know, on that last repetition, you're really happy to put the weight down. It's like, I'm glad I'm done with that set. But it wasn't to the point where you were unable to maintain good form. So enough to challenge you, but not enough to push you into sloppy technique or an injury. And like I said, you don't even need a machine. You don't need a machine. You can do simple body weight exercises like squats and lunges and push-ups and stair climbing and things like that that really do a nice job of keeping you functionally strong.
I stair climb.
Good for you. I think a lot of women don't realize what the one of the huge benefits to resistance training is that it helps to maintain good bone strength. And as we get older, women tend to lose bone density, especially after menopause. And we tend to become less and less likely to lift heavy objects. We'll turn to the nearest, you know, person nearby that looks like they're stronger and ask them, hey, can you lift this for me? And pretty soon we're not doing a whole lot. So I think it's really important, especially for women, to maintain their physical strength in their upper body and lower body. It's one of the best ways to maintain independence as you age.
Why do you call stair climbing resistance training?
Because anytime you are lifting your body weight against gravity, you have the added resistance that can provide some strength.
I see.
And it's just a matter of simple physics. You know, walking across level ground, there's not any increased resistance of gravity. But walking up a hill, you can feel the increased resistance. And walking up a flight of stairs, you can feel that increased resistance of gravity. You know, climb, go to your apartment building and climb, you know, 8 or 10 floors of stairs to get to your apartment, and most people are going to tell you they can feel their quad muscles are burning.
I usually do, like, when it's not really that hot like it is right now, I do 10 flights with no problem, and that's good. And I'm starting to do outside, something that's not level, but it's an incline, and that's really good, too. I think that's really challenging. So you went from weights into running, I presume?
Well, yeah, I mean, my background, my first degree was in physical therapy, and so I already had a strong interest in rehabilitation and kinesiology and muscle strengthening activities, and so that was a natural fit. And running was something that I took up in the mid-1980s because I really felt like I wasn't getting the aerobic demand that I needed from the weightlifting. I was definitely maintaining my strength, but I was neglecting the other part of my fitness, which is my heart and lungs, my aerobic fitness, my cardiovascular fitness. And so I started with walking. And that's what I usually tell people when they ask me, how do you start a running program? First thing I tell them is don't start with running. start with walking and get your body used to where you can walk comfortably, a brisk walk for, I don't know, a total of 10 miles a week. And if you're able to cover 10 miles a week of brisk walking, which really isn't all that high a hurdle, but if you can do that and there's no aches and pains and soreness, you're not having any leg pain or shin pain or whatever, then you're probably safe to start to introduce some short segments of easy-paced running. But introduce it carefully and listen to your body. I think that's the mistake most people make when they start into any sort of an exercise program, whether it's resistance training or running, is that they tend to jump in a little too aggressively and they end up not listening to the feedback from their body. You know, they feel something that is a little uncomfortable. I'm stiff, or my right knee is a little sore. And they just try to push on through rather than listening to those symptoms and taking a step back and going, you know, maybe I should just hold steady for a week and let my body catch up to my spirit.
So, you know, when I find that I do stairs for any length of time, the next day I'm kind of fatigued. Do you recommend, like, one day pushing yourself to the limit, and then the next day maybe a few just to keep going, and then back to pushing yourself to the limit? In other words, one day on and one day off.
Yeah, the concept of pushing yourself to the limit is not something I normally encourage my athletes to do unless they have a specific race goal in mind that we're training for. Instead, what I like to do is follow a cyclical pattern of overload and then recovery, which is kind of like what you were saying, but just not pushing it to the extremes that you were implying. So, for example, a runner might do, you know, 6 miles one day, and then the next day they might only do 3. So that's a little overload followed by a recovery day. And a recovery day can be something less intense or shorter in duration, or it could actually be a different activity. Like instead of running, you decide to go swim some laps in the pool or get on your bike and pedal for 15 or 20 minutes. Or, you know, in the case where you really feel like you're pushing your boundaries a bit, you may want to take the day off and just read a good book.
Mm-hmm. I see. So to be a physiologist, you know, that took a lot of work. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, like I said, my first degree was an associate's degree in physical therapy, and I worked in orthopedic rehab clinics for several years. And I really got tired of dealing with just treating the symptom of somebody's injury, you know, doing hot packs or massage or whatever. I wanted to treat the underlying cause of their injury. Why did your knee start to hurt? What is it about you that's not working well? Is it your flexibility? Is it your strength? Is it the movement of your foot and leg as you move over ground? What's going on here? So in order to really satisfy my curiosity and get to the bottom line of why people were getting injured, I needed to learn a lot more. So I went in and got an advanced degree, a master's degree in exercise physiology. And in doing that, I really dug in a lot into physics and kinesiology and movement analysis. And so that really, it was a good path for me. It was a good match, a nice progression.
So how long have you been practicing this?
Well, let's see. I've been working in rehab clinics since my first degree, which was finished in 1979. The master's degree was completed in 1987, and I've been coaching runners since 1992. So that's a long time. I think that officially makes me old.
No, it doesn't. I mean, you're active and you do a lot of stuff, and you're definitely a woman who inspires, because, you know, many people don't do the stuff that you do, and it's important. It's important to highlight what you do. So,
physical activity is one of the most important things you could do in any given day. And I tell you, if we could market physical activity the way we market drugs, the advertising would be like this. It would be, what if you could do something that increased your bone density, helped you maintain your body weight, increased your mood states, helped with your sex drive, you know, and you start listing off all of the things that can be improved, all the way including cognitive ability. Physical activity can stimulate your brain to regrow cells in certain areas of your brain that are contributing to your short-term and long-term memory. So, I mean, you think about all the benefits of this, and it's amazing to me that people don't take advantage of it.
Two questions. When you watch TV and you see all the commercials for diet products, you know, that doesn't go hand in hand with exercise. Does that make you somewhat uneasy that people are pushing, or companies are pushing, diet products without exercise?
Well, I understand what's going on. People want a quick fix. And health is an investment. It's not a quick fix. And you invest in your health by eating healthy foods, making healthy choices, being physically active. You know, that's not going to sell, you know, it's not going to sell magazines to put that on the cover. You got to put something splashy on there and promise people something. And so, yeah, I get frustrated because it's not an either or thing. It's not just diet or just exercise. You have to kind of consider that they both play a role in your overall health. And you can't out-exercise a bad diet, clearly. And I will also tell you that unless you eat carefully and well, you're not going to be able to reap as much benefit from your exercise as you could. So I think it's a balancing act. You have to really consider both. And at the same time, I'll also tell you that it's okay to have a cheat day from time to time. So I guess I really encourage people to step back and take a holistic view of their health and really deal with it from that standpoint.
Now, you were saying that exercise can stimulate brain activity. And when you think of something like that, you think of older people who might be declining, maybe retired. They don't have the stimulus of going to a job every day. So is that what you're referring to? In other words, does exercise benefit older people? And should older people take advantage of exercise programs?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just older people. It's no matter what your age is. Recent research has shown that physical activity and exercise can stimulate brain health all the way up into, they've measured this into the 10th decade of life. So in your 90s, you can still see improvements in brain health related to staying physically active. So it's absolutely essential, especially as we get older, to remain as physically active as you can. And that can be simple things like doing some gentle calisthenics in your house, going for a brisk walk, taking your dog for a walk, taking the stairs instead of the elevator. You know, simple choices that you make day to day make a big difference overall. Younger people, I tell them, you know, if my students, when I was teaching college, I would tell them, if you're stuck on something, if you're having a hard time getting through a homework assignment or a project, or you just can't get your head to wrap around the problem in front of you, walk away from it. Go out and go for a brisk walk or a run. And 9 times out of 10, you'll solve the problem while you're out there, or you'll be able to do it shortly after you come back. And I tell people, you know, the increased blood flow to the brain, it shouldn't surprise you that that improves your cognitive ability. I mean, it's just real simple.
Wow. That's great. And you know, there's still, do you find that because we're in a pandemic right now, people are using the pandemic as an excuse not to be physically active?
That hasn't been my experience, but I mean, I may be looking at a niche that generally doesn't look for excuses anyway. If they're going to hire me as a coach, most of the time they're pretty self-motivated. I will mm-hmm. tell you just from an anecdotal standpoint that when I take my dog out for his afternoon walk, I see a lot more people walking in my neighborhood in the afternoons than I ever did pre-pandemic. So I think in some mm-hmm. ways people are tired of being cooped up and they can't get out and go to to their restaurant or bar or nightclub or whatever. And so, you know, their only outlet per se is just to get out and go for a walk. And I think it's wonderful. And I tell people, you know, one of the ways to ward off the sense of being incarcerated that comes with this crazy time we're living in is to go outside and turn off your phone and just listen and look and smell the world around you. You know, make it a sensory adventure. See if you can pick out bird calls to your right and then the answers that are coming from your left, because birds are calling to each other. And if you tune in, you'll start to pick up on this stuff. And it lightens your mood and puts you back in touch with the things that are really important in this world, you know, the beauty of nature around you.
That sounds exciting. I never thought of listening in on birds' conversations, really. So,
oh, it's fun. And, you know, other things like watching the leaves change, or, you know, if you walk the same route every day, you know your neighbor's landscaping. And, hey, their azaleas are starting to bloom. Or, look, this neighbor's starting to put in their garden. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Tune into the world around you. Listen to the leaves when they rustle. And if it's just going to be a light rain, grab your umbrella and get outside. There's nothing more invigorating than taking a nice walk in the rain.
You enjoy that?
Do I enjoy it? Absolutely.
Uh-huh. As long as it's a light rain, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go out in a tornado, but yeah, if it's a gentle rain, I'm not made of sugar. I'm not going to melt.
Right. So, how many people do you coach at one time?
Well, it varies based on the time of year. Races tend to be clustered in the spring and the fall because it's the more favorable time to be out racing. It's really hard to run a race at your best when it's 90-something degrees outside. So race directors know
yeah.
that, and they put the races in the spring and the fall. So there's certain times of the year when I'm busier than others. Right now, things aren't all that busy because so many races have been canceled.
Right.
I keep a fairly full roster of athletes that I work with, and because my business is based online, I can work with athletes from all over the world. And I've coached athletes in California and New York and Boston, in Russia, in Australia, in Germany,
nice.
Korea. So it really doesn't matter where you are. I can work with you with the magic of the internet. We can do a video-based initial consultation and then the training plan and emails that follow.
Do you do basically phone, internet and not phone?
I will do some phone-based consultations with people, but a lot of it is better if I can do it with a video conferencing session, and especially for the initial evaluation, because I need to be able to see how you move. And so in the initial consultation with a new athlete, if I've got them on the video screen, I can take them through a series of what are called functional tests to see where they might be a little tight, or I help identify what areas of weakness they might have. They might have weakness in their right hip that doesn't show up in the left. Well, we need to deal with that, because if we don't get you balanced out and I push you into a running program, then you're just going to get injured because you've got this deficit. So that's where the background and movement analysis comes in, is I get to watch how you move and see where the restrictions and limitations and imbalances are, and then give you specific exercises to help you address those things so that as you build your running ability, you're not going to get injured.
So how do you do that? Do you do that with the person? I mean, if somebody's going to run, they're not going to be running with their laptop, right? How do you make an analysis of what their strengths and weaknesses is, you know, via technology?
Well, there's a series of movements that I can have you do that will help to reveal things about your abilities, like, for example, a deep squat test or a balance test, or, you know, have you do a plank test. And these things, I've got, you know, a benchmark that I know you should be able to accomplish X, and I watch you move and you weren't able to accomplish that. And I can see on the screen that in your attempt to do this movement that you shifted your weight one way or the other, or that you identified an area by pointing to it and telling me, when I do this movement, it hurts here. Those are all clues to me. Now, as for the specific gait analysis, watching how you run, that can easily be done by having the athlete work with a friend to shoot a short one-minute video snippet for me. So they can use their phone and shoot a video and upload it to Google for me. And on the Google Drive, I can then download that and use my proprietary software system to analyze what's going on step by step. And I can do a slow motion freeze frame analysis of what's happening in your body as you run, and tell you, hey, you know, those shoes you're using probably aren't the right match for you. You should probably look at, you know, this kind of shoe or that kind of control. Or I can look at things like, you know, you're carrying your right arm a little tighter to your body, and I think that's because of, for example, weakness in your left hip. So let's deal with your left hip. I'm not going to tell you to change your arm swing. I'm going to look at, why is your arm swing that way? And let's deal with why it that way.
So, Janet, we've run out of time. Give your contact information if anybody wants to, you know, contact you and learn more about what you do.
Just check me out at runningstrong.com online.
Thank you. You've been listening to Janet Hamilton. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is Women Who Inspire. So if you like the show, like us on Facebook and on Twitter, we are Women Inspire 21. Thank you. Thank you, Janet, for being on the show. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.